Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today's August 18th, 2018. We're here live for the next 2 hours, and once again, we've got an action-packed show, all sorts of things going on. Can't wait to get into it. But before I start my day, like I always say at the beginning of every show and in the videos I show, here's my CEFCO Cup of Coffee Premium Joe. They've got great-tasting coffee because it's consistently brewed. Tastes great. So go over there to Hilltop CEFCO in Cameron. You can get your Monsters, 3 for $5. Say hi to Becky and the gals over there. Tell them you heard it on the radio. And I think you'll enjoy it. Get your smokes, your paper, or whatever it takes to get your day going at the Hilltop CEFCO in Cameron. Now, we're simulcasting here on KMIL 105.1 FM right here, right now. We're also coming out of Rockdale, KRXT at 98.5 FM. So all you Rockdaleonians, give us a call in here. Tell us that you're listening, you're liking the show. I got a bunch of calls this morning, Trey, from people listening, doing gun transfers, the whole works.
And that's good, though. It's good to hear that people are actually listening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know they're listening, but it's always good to get the feedback.
Yeah, it's the attaboy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to make contact with us here in the studio, the number is 254-697-6633. The email here is aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Also, go directly to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Check out all the pages on the website there. And also, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram and be subscribed to the YouTube channel. Got lots and lots of videos. Had one individual come to the shop last night. Says he's almost done watching all the videos. He stays up all the time watching. Tons of great information, especially the legal ones with Rick Dodd or Benton Ross Watson. So check that all out, and you'll learn a lot from it. Now, we've got a big show going on, so let me give you the show highlights. Get you prepared here. Once again, three more true stories of self-defense from the Concealed Carry magazine. We're going to study and learn the actions of others so we might not get caught in the same types of situations. Or if we do, we know how to get out of them better. Today's License to Carry segment, brought to you by Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, will be about discipline. Or should I say the lack of discipline in our schools and how it can cause many legal problems. I was just talking to Trey about this. The discipline factors are there. It's just there's some individuals that can make it extremely difficult. So we're going to talk about that. Attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson is going to break it all down for us. Then, before the end of the first hour, the delicious Janae Goodman will give us another tactical snacking goodie. This week is going to be summer cleanup and fall gardening rotation. What to plant for fall and how to re-nourish your, how do you say it, garden beds? Is that how you say it? Your beds, the beds of the garden?
Works for me.
So get out your gardening gloves and get ready for that segment. At 11, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the exemplifier of elegance, the connoisseur of common sense, the pontificator of practicality, and all-around good guy, Randy Dixon, is the voice of law enforcement. My product spotlight this week, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the awesome Kel-Tec CMR-30 22 Mag Carbine. This is an excellent, awesome, and lightweight gun, perfect for bug-out operations. Go to my website, go to the Facebook page, check out the short video I did on the weapon there. You can get to see what it looks like. And just go to aaronsgunshop.com, check it out. You need one of these, and ANC can get it for you out in Heidenhammer. 254-983-4417.
You had me at Kel-Tec.
Okay, yeah, you like that KSG, don't you? This week, there's no guest, but I have a lot of info to go over. And also, I had a few people ask me about a few basic pistol malfunctions and how to clear them, so I'm going to go over those. Unfortunately, Master Cindy Key can't be with us today. She's got some things going on, so we're going to cut her some slack and do a replay. And that'll be almost at the end of the show. So until then, strap yourselves in, crank up the volume, tell everybody you know to listen. And we're going to start off with two stories in real life of self-defense. And Trey, once again, I've been liking us just doing ad-libbing it here. And this comes from the July issue of the Concealed Carry magazine. Story number one reads as follows. Armed Georgian drives off two armed robbers. When two hooded and armed men entered an Ackworth Waffle House, drew handguns and demanded money from the cashier, an armed customer was having none of it. He promptly drew his own pistol and fired on the duo, putting both into flight and ending the robbery attempt. No one was injured in the incident. Trey, now you see my face on this one.
You're a little undecided at this.
What do you think's going through my mind?
First, he opened fire without... Was there an opportunity for him to de-escalate, or was it the proper thing to just open fire?
Let's say it was the proper time to fire. Okay. And we have to take the facts from the story we just read. What, right. Anything bother you about that story?
My first thought is that the two were armed and he fired on them? Was he sure where his bullets were going?
Because it says nobody got injured. I'm thinking, what's the backstop? Yeah. Bullets are flying.
Yeah.
Did he just whip it out, pull out, and shoot? So
was he a cowboy or was he careful?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he was careful with no accuracy, which is not careful at all. You got no. If you're going to carry the gun, you need to train yourself. So, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm trying to say is I do not oppose anybody carrying a weapon. That's your right to carry, okay? Unfortunately, through the state here, you've got to do some licensing. But if you're going to carry that weapon, you need to train and practice and be proficient at it, okay? All right, story number two. Would-be Pennsylvania burglar dies attempting home invasion. After breaking a glass door to gain entry to a Springdale Township residence, a home invader was confronted by an armed resident who shot him once, which drove the intruder from the home. Responding police found the intruder across the street, dead from his wound. Charges have not been filed against the resident. Okay.
That's a tragedy. That poor glass door.
I know. What can we get out of this story, though? What is said that's not really said in the story? After breaking the glass, blah, blah, home invader was confronted by an armed resident who shot him once.
Well, first thing pops in my mind, if the resident was already armed when he confronted him, it means the resident grabbed the gun and then went.
That's right. Oh, man, he's good. Ah, I love it when people are just coming with all this knowledge. It's fantastic. He went and got his gun first. He didn't go, "What? Who's breaking in? Oh, it's an intruder. Let me go back and get my gun." No, he had it with him. All right, story number three. Utah concealed carry permit holder rescues cop. I think this is cool. A courageous Utah citizen is credited with saving the life of a Utah police officer. Seeing the officer being assaulted in Springville, the Good Samaritan drew his weapon, moved in on the attacker, and ordered him to stop. The attacker stopped the attack on the officer and fled the scene, but was apprehended later. The officer suffered a broken eye socket and lacerations around the eye.
Holy crap.
Now, my first comment is this about local law enforcement. Guys, deputies, officers, I think it's a really good idea if you know who's licensed to carry, become really good friends with them because they're going to back you up. I know a handful of guys who wear badges and they know me. If I'm there and something goes down or they got my number and they call me, I'm backing them up, no problem. So you could be somebody who could help an officer in distress.
It also strikes me as this is just another good reason to be on good terms with your general public. You know, if you're an officer of the law, you want to be on good terms with them for several different reasons. But if someone's beating the heck out of you, like what's happening here, it's nice to know that there's someone nearby who can help out.
Here's another thing, too. When an individual wears a badge, this relationship you're talking about, having a good relationship, a person who understands it, like a person like me without a badge, understands, hey, what's going on, buddy, the person with the badge. But when it comes time for action and the police officer's on the scene and takes control, I submit to the officer. So that's what people don't confront the officer, don't be a challenge to the officer, don't be a nuisance to the officer, and don't forget your relationship with him. It's like a father friend. I like my dad, but I also will listen and respect him.
So. You know, it's a lot of people don't consider, you know, the full depth of that relationship between law enforcement and the civilian population, okay? Yeah, they're there to make sure that the laws are enforced. They're there to keep people safe. If you extrapolate from that, that means if it happens to come to it, they've signed up to take a bullet for you. They've signed up to put their life in between you and harm, meaning they're willing to get shot, hurt, maimed, or even killed to keep you safe.
But let's be clear, it's not a requirement for them to do that.
I didn't say required.
I'm correct on that, right? It's not based on a court decision. It's not required by an officer. If he's there at the moment, he's supposed to take care of the situation.
The ones that they're willing to do it is the point.
Yeah.
They're willing to step up.
It takes a certain person to wear a badge.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. Three stories of self-defense. Hopefully we can learn from them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to let you down. I know you're waiting in bated breath
for my opinion. I mean,
piece.
Yay, here comes the opinion.
But actually, I changed it. It's not an opinion piece. It's an opivian piece. It's a combination of having a pet peeve and an opinion. Now, this has been happening.
I think I have a new pet peeve. That word opivian.
Opivian, okay. I've had this situation happen to me a lot, and it's quite irritating. And I think you're going to agree, though. I've titled this opinion piece, "Not Polite, Kind of Awkward, and Potentially Dangerous." That's the title. Ladies and gentlemen, There's an old saying that goes something like this. Do unto others as you would want done to you. Well, I try diligently to think of others as not to offend or irritate anyone from actions that I might do. I may do it, don't get me wrong, but I try not to. Here would be two quick examples just to be clear of what I'm trying to get across. Let's say belching at the dinner table. Wouldn't that be kind of awkward unless you're in Saudi Arabia where it's a compliment, I think, from what I'm told? Or how about passing gas while in a vehicle with others and the windows are shut? Okay, that's just not right. So, you with me now? Here we go. Well, one of my extreme pet peeves is while either in line at with a bank teller or cashing out in any store, and the person behind me in line decides to breathe down my neck because they're standing so close to me, or bumps me to the side so they can put their products on the counter near mine. Now, don't get me wrong. If the line is long or slow and you're holding two cases of water and you need a break, I'm probably going to say, hey, man, you want to put that on the counter there? Go ahead. And they're usually appreciative of that. But ladies and gentlemen, let's remember who I am. I'm a self-defense instructor who carries all the time and likes to maintain his tactical space. When a stranger closes in closer than arm's length distance, that person has just violated my personal space. When that happens, Matt goes to a different mindset. Now, if you were to compare my other mindset to others, you would see that I still like to be courteous. Others, however, may not be as polite, and that is where the potential problem lies. Ladies and gentlemen, in this day and age, it would be very wise to be extra courteous and to keep your distance from others when engaging in the public arena. Some may find your encroachment as a threat to their security and may use defensive verbiage or worse, defensive tactics to counter your encroachment. So what I would recommend is this. Pay attention. Be courteous. Be patient. And most definitely, stay out of people's personal space, especially mine. And with that, Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have the attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson with us. And we're going to be talking, I believe it's going to be lack of discipline in the schools and the potential legalities that could be caused by it. As Ross looks at me. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035.
Vicky Goza of Mark Burns Lewell Funeral Home in Cameron talks about being just a phone call away.
We are at a family's disposal 24/7. You don't get an answering machine. You may be talking with the family late at night or thought of something. You can pick up that phone and call and know that you're going to talk to one of us.
Call anytime, 254-697-3661.
You will feel like you are the only family that we're working with.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Are you fed up with sports talk shows that water down the truth and cover sports you really don't care about? Then it's time for Bleacher Bum Radio, Central Texas' only answer to those namby-pamby sports talk shows. Join me, Buffalo Bill Whitmire, and the Bleacher Bums on KMIL 105.1 The Ranch as we bring you all the hot takes with our own special brand of commentary on all things sports. From the guys who can't even get into the tailgate, Bleacher Bum Radio every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8:30 and again from 9:20 to 9:50.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Everybody, the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program again, August 18th, 2018, simulcasting live here on KMIL 105.1 FM and a Rockdale at KRXT 98.5 FM. The number here is 254-697-6633. Give us a call. And to my left, I have the awesome attorney extraordinaire, Benton Ross Watson. Ross, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, man? Just trying to get my satisfaction there.
Well, how's that building coming? You getting satisfied with that building?
No comment.
All right, Ross, we were talking here about the lack of... How do I explain this? I'm not saying the lack of discipline from the schools. The schools have a procedure, but their hands are being tied. And then we have the few that are causing problems, and then with those problems, we have potential legalities that come into play. So with that opener, I know you got all these notes. Why don't you lead us in a direction?
I think when you asked me, you know, you basically just tell me kind of a general direction you want to go, or you just complain about stuff to
no,
me.
No, I don't. I don't complain.
And then we go, oh, that'll be a good topic. And so I think your initial question was, how did it get like this? And how did what get like what? And I think basically it's kind of what and at least an underlying theme of your show is, which is, you know, how did a lot of society get to where we are today, where we don't care as much about the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, some constitutional rights. We don't care as much about discipline of the kids, or maybe we do, and right, there's too much going on to prevent that, or maybe, you know, kids are too soft, or basically just general fashions of the day. And I mean, we're always at least complaining about
the majority of bulk things. Answer is family breakdown. That's a majority.
So
of the
yes,
answer.
I was gonna say the place that I start every time. I'm not gonna beat dead horses here because I talk about this all the time. But the place I definitely am gonna start at is the breakdown of the family nucleus. It all starts, and there's just a minutia, a ton of problems, right? And specific problems that I think have led to kind of where we are today, and with some of the problems, I think some of where we are today is great. You know, some people always talk about the good old days, you know, well, the good old days where people were getting lynched and hung and right? There was no equal pay for certain things. People were, you know, just railroaded. There was no spotlight on the wrongs that were happening, so these wrongs kept happening. So in some sense, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, today is such a horrible time.
But you know what's
weird?
People bring that up all the time. Yeah, it happened. It's just like they want to remove these statues. It happened. It's history, but we advanced that. And sure, you have the remnants of a few people who go back that way, and that, those are the ones we take care of.
I think that's Ross's point. We've advanced past that. There's no good old days. There's no. It's not bad now.
No, I know. I'm agreeing with him. Yeah. But I was saying you've got people out there who want to keep going there, and those people are the ones that cause discontent in others. They just don't shut up.
Yeah, and so I mean, I agree. Those things exist too. I don't, you know, you're always going to have people that just go against the grain just to go against the grain, I think. But, you know, I think the problems we are having today, like the things that we know are issues, start with a breakdown of the family nucleus. I don't know that kids, I don't really know, I don't think I'm qualified to say kids across the border are softer. I know I definitely feel that way. But I don't think they're as equipped to deal with a lot of stressors that, you know, even I could have dealt with. And I don't even think I was nearly equipped to deal with them as my dad was, or people that had, you know, were 20 years older than I was.
I think it's the hardness of the times that people
live. It was. And so they've actually done some studies. I was looking at the like the Journal of Hand Therapy. And they go back.
Hand therapy for what?
There is such a thing, okay? So, and it's actually been quoted in quite a few other, like,
guys don't journals. Want calluses on their hands, man.
And so there's this, they go back all the way, you know, to the early, maybe not early 1900s, but like 1950s era, and they've been doing studies about the grip strength and pinch strength of students, you know, about 18, 17, 16, 18 years old, right, during those times, and you could see...
I can see how that would go down, yeah.
From like 1975 to today, we've lost, like, you know, 20 to 30 points in grip strength.
But I'll bet you their thumb strength has gone off the charts.
And their hand-eye coordination, and their ability to retain information, and their spatial recognition.
And that's great, but not on the battlefield when you got, you know, you're not going to be doing this on the battlefield. You need a little bit of strength, you know?
What I'm getting at is... The skills that are needed or that are practiced today are completely different.
Exactly.
You might not be able to take a kid from today and drop him in the hayfield and say, hey, we're hauling hay today. And he's going to be like, oh, my God. But then again, you can't take, you know, a kid from that day and say, hey, we need to, you know, work our way through this program on the computer. He's like, what's a computer? I mean, that's the point. It's completely different skills.
I would just like a more diversification of everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, instead of somebody being so
specializations
one
for
way,
insects.
You know, if you have a general field of it all, you know how to change your tire, but you also know how to input data, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I've been saying that's a problem with schools probably, I mean, I don't, for as long as I can remember, as long as I know of. I mean, schools, that's one thing they don't teach you. They don't teach you everything. They don't teach you how to go apply for a credit card or set up a bank account. They don't talk to you about insurance. They don't talk to you about... That's why law school is so great. I mean, I learned things in law school that I probably should have already learned or things that I was doing, but I really didn't have a full understanding of the consequences until I went to law school of the different aspects of life. That's why we say that the law is a profession of life. Is a life profession. I don't mean profession for the length of my life.
No, I understand.
I mean,
what
it's
saying.
A profession about life and
it
life
every
events.
Aspect, right?
Right. And so I wish there was something that we had in public schools that would cover.
We did home economics, but everybody laughed about it because that's a girls' class, right? Oh my God, I got to college. I wish I knew how to cook. I wish I knew how to sew that button back on my pants or my
balance
shirt.
Balance a checkbook.
Balance a checkbook. Not get myself into stupid debt.
Right, and so I think, but we don't have anything, I don't think, targeted to the everyday minutia, common sense decisions that we need to make on an everyday basis. I think it would be great if that could be. But let's talk about the consequences, though.
How about the basic able to communicate with one another? The ability to communicate on these younger and younger levels, it's deteriorating.
So there is a problem, right, with the communication on a personal level. Right, and that has been caused by social media, that has been caused by technology, right? They're so used to the digital way of conveying their messages, conveying their emotions, conveying what they are affiliated with, that a lot of times there has been a breakdown in the way that they interact on a personal level. And that would go into a great conversation if we were talking about ego states today, to talk about how to handle a conflict, although I'm probably the worst person to be telling somebody to handle an ego. My way to handle a conflict is, where's the gasoline? I'm just like, but there is this problem with being able to communicate right on a personal level with other people in person. You know what I'm saying? So we do have that issue. I mean, Trey, I'm sure. What do you get? You don't have any comments on communication as far as what you've seen, even not only as a father, but as an educator and so on.
Well, you know, when you start relying on Twitter, Instagram, email, you're texting, you know, a lot of that, you're posting something, you're not talking, it's not a dialogue, it's a monologue. And if you're just monologuing, you're not interacting with someone.
A lot of people date that way, and that's why there's a lot of problems. They just don't know how to interact.
You're right. If there's no communication.
Hey, Trey, here's a perfect example. Here's a perfect example. When I do malfunction drills, which I'll be doing later today, you've seen me do them before.
Okay.
I'm doing it over the radio. So verbiage is key. You've got to have a good basic ability to speak and convey pictures with words. That's gone because they're using what are the abbreviations? Some of those emoticons, what do you call them?
Emoticons.
Emoticons. So, I mean, you can't do that. You got to be able to speak it, not just send a picture.
You have the other problem. You don't know how to speak.
You know, the emoticons are just a modern version of symbol, like the fish symbol for Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that it has a whole lot of knowledge behind it, a whole lot of information and context behind it. You don't need to see that and then have the whole thing written out saying that what it is and whatnot. You just see that and it's that one symbol.
A picture speaks a thousand words.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
But it's the same thing with mathematics. Go ahead, utilize a calculator, but you better know how to fall back on pencil and paper. If you got a GPS system, that's awesome. But if it doesn't work, you better know how to use a map and compass.
Oh, absolutely.
So when it comes to your phone not working and you got to convey a message, you should be able to use dialogue instead of pictures.
And so this is a good segue into like some specific problems, right, when we're talking about schools. And so when we talk about pictures and conveying a thousand words and social media issues, right, there has been a large number of cases, an explosion pretty much, where you have students using social media as a way to talk about and communicate about things that are happening in the school, right, or things that happen that affect the school, or even school personnel directly. For instance, there was a few cases where kids have set up fake profiles, right, and put their principal or the superintendent or the athletic director or coach or teacher or whatever on there, you know, and with the horns and the, you know, probably doing all kinds of things, and then doing a fake profile and just really just saying really mean things about the person, but in the person's, right, as if it was coming from the person, him or herself. And so, you know, you go on there, and I mean, there, I can't even say it on the radio what the things that were being said by the students and educators. You know, it really undermined that educator's or that person's authority in the school. And then when kids would go to school, mm-hmm, they would not listen to what this person was saying. They would act out in class. They wouldn't really care what the curriculum was because, well, this guy's a you-know-what. Yeah, right. He's an idiot
because we saw it on,
and nobody else has listened to him, so I'm not going to listen to him either. And so the schools then had to make a determination. Well, do we suspend these kids and fight to destroy this Facebook profile, right, or risk a lawsuit for violation of their First Amendment rights?
Well, isn't that libel?
Is it?
I mean, it's red media, and it's untrue.
Defamation?
And it's defamation, right?
Possibly.
With the intent to harm either reputation or person.
You're going to have some First Amendment issues there, especially because it's a government official. They're talking about, right, things of public concern. Okay, they're talking about things that affect right, the school, some of those cases, yes, they won a defamation case. Other cases, it was more of a gray area. Oh, it wasn't so much direct insult as it was hyperbole.
This has come out so much in the last 10 years, these legal problems, big time. And it didn't happen before because if Johnny did something like that, daddy and mommy said, what the heck? And he'd get the backside slapped out of him.
Or it was, you know, the five people that ever read your yearbook saw the mustache you drew on the principal. It's only five people. Right. But you go on Facebook, you got 5,000, 50,000 that are reading it.
Is that for us?
Might be. Find out.
Let's take a call, see what we got. This is the Aaron's High Cab Adventure Radio Program. You are on the air. Welcome. What's your name?
This is Juanes.
Thanks for calling. Talk to you later. All right, go ahead.
Juanes is pretty good, though. So you had Tinker, right? And Tinker was a Supreme Court case, Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District. And that was during the Vietnam War. It was black armbands, and kids were wearing the black armbands to, you know, as a way to rebel and speak out against the Vietnam War. I think in this situation, this was a good decision. I think in and of itself to the specific facts of the case. But school lawyers will tell you and school officials will tell you that Tinker was the demise, okay, of school authority. And it kind of changed the dynamic, and it gave students constitutional rights. This is the constitutional rights do not stop at the schoolhouse door. Okay, and the school would have to prove that there was a material and substantial, a significant disruption or disturbance of their ability to operate the school, of school operation, before they could discipline the kids for basically a constitutional right.
Well, your illustration of a false profile and the guy losing all total credibility, that would seem to register with that.
There's a big difference between wearing a black armband in protest of something, which is a legitimate right, and then making a mock profile saying, I like to fornicate with sheep. I mean, there's a huge difference there.
Did that happen? You pulled that from pretty quick. So anyway, I want to know that case. But you're right. But sometimes it's obvious hyperbole. It's obvious political speech. There could be issues where there could be political speech involved. When you have a school board, when you have a superintendent or a problem with the principal. And so there is a really hard decision to make for school administrators. Do I go after this kid, or do I risk a lawsuit for First Amendment, you know, some kind of constitutional right?
When does it become political speech, though? I mean, teachers aren't generally politically appointed or
school board.
Well, right, but if it's about the superintendent.
And even if it's about the superintendent or the principal, the school board is the one that's making those hiring decisions.
Why can they take God out of school, but they can't stop somebody from being disruptive?
Again, I'm telling you when they can and when they can't. Like, you can't.
I got you.
So Morse versus Frederick was bong hits for Jesus case. They were at a parade, and the guy has the banner, and he pulls his banner out. Wow. And all of a sudden says, bong hits for Jesus. Okay, and this was 1975, okay? So he's trying to fight for the rights of marijuana smokers everywhere, you know? 420, I think, is what, you know? And so it's one of those things, and it wasn't in school. It wasn't in school, but, you know, there was some school sponsors at the parade. And so was it a school-sponsored event that could be classified as school? And so Supreme Court said in that case, Morse versus Frederick, that at a school-sponsored event or a school function, right, that the, you know, teachers have a right to discipline, right, when it comes to drug use, illegal drug use messages about illegal drug use. And so, and this was one of those cases, and so Morse lost that case. But these cases go to show you, and then there's Goss versus Lopez, right, and Goss versus Lopez is a huge brawl. Huge brawl between the students, and right off the bat, they break everybody up and they suspend them all. Boom. So the kids end up, you know, appealing it, suing the school, going after them because there was no due process hearing. Okay, well, this was a brawl. This was a brawl, right? And it was obvious these kids had to go home and leave the school, and educators are like, are you kidding me? We didn't have a due process hearing, right, before we suspended them. Right. And the school lost, okay? And the Supreme Court said there had to be a due process hearing. And so, but you got to understand, too, that we talk about, when the Supreme Court's making these decisions, they're not just looking at, those individual cases. They're worried about if we say there doesn't have to be a due process hearing, what's going to happen in the 100,000 other cases that are not so obvious?
Totally get it. Totally agree. It wouldn't come up, though, if we had a different mindset.
Exactly.
Because it's broken down. Because you didn't have this problem before. It's because there was respect. And it was limited. It's always there. But it was limited because you had more of a family unit that showed and taught respect and honor and dignity. And you just wouldn't do that in the first place.
And now it's very bureaucratic and technical, right? And so the teachers sometimes go overboard. So the Gun Safety Control Act, it wasn't the Gun Control Act, it was the Gun Education Safety Act, right, came out, and there was a couple of other kind of sister acts that came out with that. For some reason, the exact name of the law is evading my memory right now, but there's a couple of sister laws that are going to tell you, or they're going to regulate the weapons, they're going to allow schools to keep weapons out of schools, but when they enacted those, right, everything became a weapon. Right when they enacted them, or right when they became big and there was a big push, everything became a weapon. If the kid had a nail in his, you know,
that's a weapon. And they think a finger gun is a weapon.
And so suspension, school suspensions exploded. And then there was another back push saying, whoa, you guys are being unreasonable. And then we had to have school policy changes to try to make those policies, right, incorporate a reasonableness standard and a due process thing into the federal acts. And it's just been a minutia of headache. A tornado of headache, right, for school administrators. And, I mean, this has been a real problem. And it undermines a lot of their disciplinary authority, because even if it's not a winning case, right, if it's such a technical issue, right, a student may challenge that authority, right, just because they know, right, if I sue them, I'm going to show them who's boss, even if I lose. Because they're going to have to spend so much time and money, it's going to bog the school down, yep, right? They may not do anything to begin with, right? But even if they do, they're going to pay for it.
Would you agree or disagree that this is almost a non-reversible trend? I'll say almost, because you never know.
I definitely would say it's almost an unreversible trend.
I know, it's
trend.
Just like...
So, I don't know how to fix some of the issues.
It would take generations, at least two. If you started now, it'd take two or three generations before you got us back in track of respect and dignity for one another.
But I think we can start implementing a couple of things into the schools, like the common sense. Let's do an everyday, right, class for everyday common sense decisions. I think we could do... Right, I think there needs to be some kind of moral teaching. If it's, you're not going to do religion, right? Why is it so bad to teach ethics?
It's not. I don't believe, and that's. I work with younger kids. I work with 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, all the way up to 9-year-olds. Okay, and I've noticed that's one of the things that a lot of the teachers that I work with, they almost universally just common sense. What we accept as common sense, don't hit people, don't kick people, treat them the way you want to be treated. You opened with the golden rule, don't push in line. Help your friends. Someone's got to clean up a center. Help them clean up. Then if you need help, they'll be there to help you. Play fair. Just these are the things that the teachers I work with, that's what we try to teach. Basic life skills for kids that age. That's the foundation you want to build on. The thing is, that's not always backed up at home. And, we have them for 8 hours a day, and it's during the day. But at their most intense things they'll witness or learn from are going to be from people who are the biggest in their lives, their parents, their siblings, their grandparents, their cousins. So Are the family teaching them the same things? Or are they learning, you don't get your way, hit, scream, yell until you get your way. Make everybody else miserable if you're miserable. Are they learning?
Let me ask you this. So there's been a big push, too, in family. If you had several hours, I would go into the family nucleus. What is every single thing about that that affects everyday life? But I want to point this one out. There's been a trend, a recent trend, to... take some of the important. Not, I mean, the kids are important, and in family law cases, if there's kids involved, that's usually the central focal point, right, of the litigation. But there's been a trend to take a little of that importance off the kids and put it back on the parents. So, because forever there was this thing, oh, it's the best interest of the child only. Only the best interest of the child matters. It's only what matters to the best interest of the child. And then in a couple cases, they said, whoa, what about the interest of the parents? Do the interests of the parents ever trump the interests of the children? And I was thinking, you know, that's probably how it should be. If the parents want to go live here and grow up on a farm and this and that and raise their kids on the farm, that is the parents' prerogative. Why do we never consider what the parents' interests are? Now, there haven't been any just big seminal cases yet that have come out, but there's been this recent trend to kind of go with what is important to the parents, right? Not just about what's important to the kids. Do you think we put... So I'm asking you, do you think we are putting too much emphasis maybe on only the best interest of the children?
Absolutely.
And not enough on what's important to other people?
Absolutely.
Honestly, how do you determine what's the best interest of the child?
Oh, well, yeah. I'll disagree with that.
I don't know how I can work this in here, but when my kids were being raised, I told them I own you until you're 18. What I say goes. What my best interests are will be your best interest, and that's it. I'll listen to what you have to say. If I feel there's merit to it, I'll adjust accordingly. But I rule. I decide. The cement is poured, and I'm trying to mold it before it hardens, because once they're 18, they're gone. The parent needs to have the ability to discipline their children and not worry about getting Child Protective Services on them. Exactly. I read an article. Remember that one article? The grandma spanked the kid in the Walmart bathroom, and somebody calls the cops out. It's ridiculous, man.
But the parent also needs to have the wisdom on how to discipline the child. I mean, spanking is one thing, but a closed fist?
That's between you and me. That's common sense. Okay. The person who hits their child with a fist, and if it's seen or if there's child abuse, by all means, man. I don't say don't do anything.
Unfortunately, common sense is really uncommon.
It's true.
And so we not only CPS, right? We've got the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the IDEA, IDEA, okay? And there's been a bunch of problems with school administrators about how they discipline children, right, under the IDEA. I can name a few case studies and examples. Oh, there was a good article. If anybody's curious about any of this, everything that I've actually talked about is covered at least a little bit, right, in an article, I think, that's called Who Killed School Discipline? In that article, they talk about the case studies, and they talk about there being the same set of circumstances. Child brings a weapon to school, is the same kind of weapon, right? One child has a stuttering defect, you know, they stutter. The other child is normal, has no other defect, and this child is suspended for a year, whereas the child under the IDEA got a 45-day suspension. Same set of facts, same set of circumstances, except the only difference was one kid had a stuttering, right, defect, and qualified and fell under the IDEA. And so you've got to ask, you know, how do these kinds of cases happen? They do. And I spoke about some of the cases that I had where you, and I tried to change the facts. Let me see if I can change the facts. Has a farm equipment tool in the back of his truck, and they doing a walkthrough in the parking lot and happen to see a farm tool and call the farm tool a weapon. Okay, and this kid who never been in trouble before.
That kind of happened with a machete, just a basic machete that you would have. That would be considered a weapon.
Yes, yes. Okay, and so, you know, the child is up for valedictorian, also for an honors spot, scholarships, everything else. Is it okay to suspend this kid? And, you know, there's hard questions to find answers to.
I put blame a lot on parents and upbringing, and I put a lot of blame on what you just said there, no common sense for the adult. You got a student who's going to be a valedictorian, great record, and because they look at this thing as zero tolerance, and you can't say it's quite obvious what the child has no problems. He comes from a family that owns a ranch or a farm. He's driving a truck. He's working, no problems, and they're gonna do a zero tolerance policy.
You know, a lot of it is, like you said, is context. I mean, that child, that student that shows up in Cameron, okay, we're a rural area. There's a good chance he is working on a farm, but that child shows up in Chicago. He's got a machete in the back of his truck.
Okay, different story.
That's a different story.
What about when they draw a gun on a piece of paper? What if they use their finger? I've read articles where a kid points his finger at somebody and they tell him zero tolerance, it's a gun, you're out. I read it, man. I read it. I think that was Chicago.
Well, in Chicago, very well could have been a gun hidden as a finger.
So, I mean, I think you guys are making the case for why this is so difficult, though.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I think we start to see that. Right, educators, instead of just reacting and maybe disciplining a child like they should, right, they have to think about, oh, the IDEA, the Texas Penal Code, the Weapons Acts, the school policies, right, the First Amendment constitutional rights, and by the time they make their checklist, you know, well, the kid's already over doing something else.
Before we can put the second Lego block down, the first one has to be set. We all said something here that explains or identifies problems, but what could that first Lego block be that we all could do that, if goes successfully, could potentially house the second block on top of it and we go from there? Did you get my meaning there? We have to have some, what one little thing can we start right now that if we all did it, it might be able to open the door to be able to put the second block on top of it? Because right now there's no first block. We need a block to put down, a base block. Anything, any ideas? What you could do? I know what it would be for me, but how do you get that? And that would be better upbringing in the home. But that's part of the problem, is the home is in shambles. So how do we, what do we do?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, the family nucleus. But there's that issue. I think maybe stop putting so much emphasis, right, outside of the educational aspect, stop putting so much emphasis, right, on the best interest of the child, right, and start focusing on what's good for the parents, what's good for society, right? And I'm not saying take away. I'm not saying get rid of best interest of child standard. I'm just saying don't put everything of emphasis.
How about this as an example?
We should at least consider a little more about what the other parties have going on, is my point.
I'm going to say something, but then it's going to probably default to a legal potential issue. Couldn't we all just say somebody says something disrespectful to somebody else, and as we, standing there leading the example, say, hey, you know, that's not nice. You shouldn't say that. That's disrespectful. You may not have heard yourself, but this is what you're saying. That's vulgar. Don't say that. And if everybody would, instead of shake their head saying, oh, that kid has no upbringing, why can't we all be examples in leadership when it comes to that aspect and maybe say, hey, don't do that, or I won't accept that. Sorry, I'm not going to accept that. And if enough people did that, and let's say we have a disrespectful child trying to get a job and doesn't dress properly, doesn't comb his hair, doesn't look respectable. I don't care what your style is, as long as you're in a clean, respectable manner, and you come up to try to get a job for me, I'm going to say, no, I'm sorry, you just don't meet the standards. But I know that's a major legal issue, right?
The verbiage we use at the school a lot is, that's not okay. You know, you said such and such to this person. That's not okay. It's not okay to talk to people like that.
And if enough people said that at the same time, we make a dent. Yes? No? What do you think?
Yeah, if enough people would say it, and I think that's the problem too, is that some people are scared to say, tell somebody it's not okay to do something, because for fear that they're going to violate some rule or some...
Or peer pressure, right? Or peer pressure, fear of conflict.
Yeah, exactly. And so yeah. I think, you know, knowing the rules, one, will help you, right, be able to say, no, that's not okay, and give you confidence. Two, really, I think at some point, you just got to throw that stuff out the window, and you got to do what's right and wrong. You got to tell the difference between what's right and wrong.
I do want to point something out.
If it's right, if it's wrong, it's wrong.
You know, in a school of, you know, 500 plus students, okay, there may be three discipline problems. I mean, and that's, yeah, the discipline problem is the one, you know, they say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but that's what it, you know, most same, of the kids, as a rule, they're going to get along. They want to get along.
It's the same thing with gun problems. You got, yes, when you have a mass shooting, it's a terrible thing. But how many of those really happen? One, it's a terrible thing. Not a problem. I get it. Totally get where you're coming from. But a very small percentage of people who go nuts, it's then blown out of proportion by the media, and then you got copycats. If the media would downplay it, that's another thing that we could do to help it out. Downplaying things, address it in a private manner, and accomplish the mission that way. But when you broadcast, if somebody's going, oh, you know, I didn't think about that.
And you glorify it, yeah.
That's right, and I said that in my other opinion piece. If you don't glorify it and you don't give them a platform to promote it, you're going to see school shootings go away. You want to wrap this up? I got to...
Yeah, and so from a legal standpoint, you got to, if you're an educator, you've got a lot of risks involved, and if you go too far with discipline, you could have a criminal case, although you do get the right to use corporal punishment. There was actually a case about a football coach who was trying to motivate a kid. You know, he was lazy or whatever it was, and kind of hit him on the head, helmet, when he had a helmet on real hard, and grabbed him by the face mask, and ended up, what ended up happening in that case, the parents sued the football coach, and the football coach, though, ended up, the jury found for the football coach. Okay, there was a problem with the jury charges, though, and so they had to go back and do it again, and we don't know what happened. We don't know what the result was after they did it again.
I had a football coach hit me in the head with a helmet. He goes, what are you doing? I go, yes, coach. And I just moved on.
Exactly. I thought, man, that's crazy, and my coach hit me.
That's why I'm the way I am today.
Maybe that's why what's wrong with me.
You got something there.
All right, tell everybody how they get a hold of you.
So
man,
you do have a defense, but you do have to be careful.
Janae's going
to
run a few minutes late. I want to take care of
So, and I know we didn't get into all of it, but if you have any more questions, feel free to give us a call. The number's 254-605-4140. That's 254-605-4140. If it is a personal injury kind of question, you can call the other speaker that comes on the show, Rick Dodd, at Capilino Dodd and Krebs Law Firm. But if you come see me, I'm at 105 East Main Street in Cameron. Big milk cow on the side, new building going up. Hopefully it's done pretty quick. And
I think you need to put a roll of hay out there just for effect.
And we get questions all the time. We love questions. Just if you do email me at benton@watson.legal. Again, my email is benton@watson.legal. When you use that email, make sure you leave your phone number. And we'll be happy to get back to you.
Sounds great. Ross, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And hopefully we can get both of you guys on some point. I think Rick's coming on next week, but we'll see. All right. Trey, let me keep me on the air here. Let me go over a few topics of interest real quick. Last night was ladies' night. We're getting more and more ladies coming to the range. Ladies' night is always the third Friday of the month. If you identify as a woman, or you are a woman, I got it, Trey. your range time is free. First Fridays of the month is two for nights. So if you got a friend, the friend shoots for free. Range time is free. Second Friday of the month is the round robins. You must, if you're going to carry a gun, consider taking a round robin competition. It's a great way to train, and it puts you under a lot of stress, so that's good. Let's see here. I got a license to carry class September 8th, Saturday at 2 p.m. You can go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and give me an email to confirm your spot on there. It's $60 for a new person, and if you have a license already and you want to just get a refresher course on the laws and stuff, that's $40. And seminars, got a lot of people asking me about different types of seminars. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, check out the shotgun seminar, AR seminar, semi-auto rifle seminar, home defense and self-protection, home defense, co-ed, and then we got a ladies only. Ladies only, they always let their hair down and have a great time because the guys aren't there, so consider that. If you got a group of five or more, we'll set up a class for you. So lots going on at Aaron's Gun Shop. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and you can give me an email if you want at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. So, Trey, let's take it away and do the delicious Janae Goodman with her segment. Yeah, let's just do that. Save some time because Chief will be calling in a minute.
Hello, my lovelies. With summer nearly over, I thought it best to get you in the mindset for your fall garden preparation. I'm Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. I often get asked why gardening is so important. Why bother when the grocery store is fully stocked all year round? The explanation is quite simple. When you produce your own crops, you are in complete control of what you're eating. I want you to think about that for a moment. Quite often, the products we get in the store are pumped with chemicals, and it's easy to ignore the labels, especially when they aren't present on most vegetables and fruits. Growing your own food also means that it's fresher and tastier. you have the option to pick harvest at the peak of ripeness. That means you no longer have to torture yourself with cardboard cutouts. Whoops, I mean underripe, tasteless produce. I understand that gardening can be a lot of rigorous work, but I promise that the payout is well beyond worth it. Lastly, planting a garden will save you money in the long run. Depending on the variety, a pack of seeds won't run you more than a couple of dollars. And if you practice seed saving, that's money you don't have to spend but once. Seed saving is the act of preserving seeds from a previous harvest, so they can be used for the next planting season. If you choose to practice seed saving at home, be sure to rinse and dry your seeds and store them in a cool, dry place to prevent molding. Let's talk about what to do to get you ready for fall. You still have plenty of time to harvest your peppers, cucumbers, melon, onions, okra, squash, and eggplant. If you've planted sweet potatoes along with me this summer, they may be ready to harvest soon. Look for yellowing leaves to be sure, but know that they're resilient and they can stay in warmer soil. I don't plan on harvesting my sweet potatoes with my classes until early September. After harvesting, they will need a couple of weeks to cure to develop sweetness before being prepped. Pumpkins should be ready to harvest soon as well. You'll know that they're ready when they're more resilient to puncturing the skin with your nail. They should also be hollow and tapped. Some varieties will also begin to brown at the stem. Before you start planting anything, take time to nourish your garden beds. You can do so by turning in slow-release fertilizer or layering your beds with compost topsoil. You'll also want to practice rotational gardening. This practice allows for soil to have a rest and ensures that it doesn't lose fertility. Planting the same crop repeatedly in the same spot also tends to make your crop more susceptible to soil-borne illnesses. So, for example, if you planted broccoli in a certain bed last year, choose a different placement this year if space allows. Almanac.com has a wonderful planting calendar to help you determine the best months to plant your certain produce in your area. Because most Texas areas are still experiencing summer temperatures, your planting options are a tad bit limited. Garlic can be planted outside, while kale, broccoli, and cauliflower plants can be started indoors and be transplanted in later weeks. This simply means that the plant will grow in a container and then will be introduced to your garden area after we get to cooler weather. While you're waiting, you can always plant beans and peas to help fix nitrogen back into your soil. They work great as cover crops while promoting nutrient-rich land. Regardless of what season you're in, it's very important to mulch your beds. You can do so with a very thin layer of hay for newly planted crops or dried leaves if your plants are already established. Mulching not only keeps the sun at bay during the hotter months of the year, but it also helps preserve water in your beds. Be sure that your ground cover isn't over your leaves or your plant, however. You want to tuck your hay or cover underneath your crop's leaves. Otherwise, you'll risk rotting and wilting of your plants. Have something you'd like me to feature on the show? Hit me up at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. Got culinary and gardening questions and concerns? Send those in, too. Oh, and did I mention last week's segment on back-to-school meals is on the homepage of thecultivatedclassroom.com? Make sure to check it out. And don't forget to join me next week around the same time. But until then, stay hungry, my friends.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Motors. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Not everyone believes in the same way or has the same customs and cultures as everyone else.
Vicki Goza of Mark Burns Lidwell Funeral Home in Cameron talks about individual needs.
We can make everything very personalized. It's not a package A, a package B, or a package C. It's totally about the family and what their needs are.
Mark Burns Lidwell Funeral Home in Cameron, serving Central Texas families since 1908.
Are you fed up with sports talk shows that water down the truth and cover sports you really don't care about?
Then it's time for Bleacher Bum Radio, Central Texas' only answer to those namby-pamby sports talk shows. Join me, Buffalo Bill Whitmire, and the Bleacher Bums on KMIL 105.1 The Ranch as we bring you all the hot takes with our own special brand of commentary on all things sports. From the guys who can't even get into the tailgate, Bleacher Bum Radio every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8:30 and again from 9:20 to 9:50.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
It is now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia. Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good morning, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful day out here on this Saturday. Doing a little bit of remote, I guess you'd say. I'm down in Galveston County. I brought some, have grandson down here. I had to bring some things down to him. They start school last week. He was a student in Santa Fe High School last year when all the shooting took place. So I bring him a couple items down here and hoping to have a great school year. Also, I want to give a shout-out to my son. He's one of the 90 firefighters from Texas that was flown to California to help fight the major forest fires there. He's actually at the Car Fire, which is a fire that's claimed 5 firefighters so far. So if you don't mind, say a prayer for my son and all the other firefighters that are down there. Today, what I'm going to talk about is something that has been in the news the last couple of days. If you've noticed the news, if you've heard the news, there are a tremendous amount of people that have been arrested in the local Central Texas area for methamphetamine production and methamphetamine distribution. You know, there's a lot of different drugs out there. There's drugs that, you know, when I'm back, used to be crack cocaine was the drug that everyone feared the most for a community. You know, when I started policing many, many years ago, it was the old, the Bennies, they'd call them, then it was the marijuana, then it was the cocaine, now it's crack cocaine. Well, methamphetamine has taken over that. The effects that it has on a person and the problem it creates for people who become addicted to the cheaper form of crack is just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. You know, I'd like to take a more serious approach to a street drug that has Society and has become so popular in Central Texas. I don't care if you're in Killeen, Temple, Waco. I don't care if you're in Cameron, wherever you are. Methamphetamine is now becoming the drug of choice. In particular, crystal meth, as referred to, has become a drug which not only has crippled family structures of those who are involved in it, but it's created a nightmare for law enforcement, a true nightmare. One of the reasons that drug is so popular right now is, number one, it's very inexpensive, but number two, especially in rural areas where law enforcement has their hands full doing just general police work, people can manufacture meth with a much easier process nowadays. Now, where does crystal meth come from? Well, as you know, methamphetamine is available with a prescription for obesity, attention deficit disorder, narcolepsy, but crystal meth is a street drug made in illegal labs by chemically altering over-the-counter drugs. A lot of cold medicines have ephedrine in it and things of that nature that are used in that. Making crystal meth usually involves reducing ephedrine or pseudoephedrine found in cold and allergy medicines. It's a simple process if you know what you're doing. In the United States, a typical meth lab employs something called the red, white, and... excuse me for a minute. The red, white process that basically uses phosphorus. And what happens is, this entails hydrogenation of hydrol group on the ephedrine and pseudoephedrine molecule, which is really simple. And I know that sounds complex, but it's not. The red is nothing more than phosphorus, the white is the ephedrine, and the blue is the iodine, which is used to make hydrochloric acid. Making meth is dangerous to people making it, and dangerous to the neighborhood where it's being made, honestly. People take a big chance. A lot of people now are using mobile meth labs in their cars to make it, and people who do that are taking not only you at risk, but all your family at risk. White phosphorus with sodium hydroxide can produce a poisonous phosphine gas, usually as a result of overheating red phosphorus. Plus, white phosphorus can also cause an auto engine to ignite and blow up the meth lab itself. In addition to phosphine and phosphorus, very hazardous chemicals and vapors are put off by it. One of those chemicals, believe it or not, is chloroform. Also, they use ether, acetone, and ammonia. All of this comes together, and all of it is put together, and many times they put mercury in it, some hydrogen in it, and some lithium in it from batteries. And what happens is people mix that together, cook it, and then people ingest that into their bodies. Can you believe that? So how is crystal meth used? Usually, crystal meth is smoked in glass pipes, similar to how crack cocaine is used. It can be injected, either dry or dissolved in water, snorted or swallowed. It's a very, what you'd call, multifunctional drug. Females often take crystal meth because it causes extreme, rapid weight loss. So if you have someone you're concerned about, and they've had rapid loss, and you can't tell what it's from, check into it a little bit. Start checking for sores on their skin. Checking for their teeth starting to have problems. But, however, the effects are also short-term. The body builds up a tolerance to any type of crystal meth that is used. And, unfortunately, the only way to increase that is to use more. You know, the thing with crystal meth is that if someone stops, and this is we've all heard about addictions, and we know what addictions do. But if someone stops, then they, after about 6 weeks or so, they actually can start weaning themselves off that drug. Also, weight that is lost is regained once a person stops taking methamphetamine. For these reasons, folks, combined with how addictive the drug is, methamphetamine tends not to be prescribed by doctors for weight loss at all. Matter of fact, almost no amphetamines are used anymore. Some people take meth because of long-term high that it gives them. Meth causes numerous neurotransmitter problems to be released in the brain and produces a sense of euphoria that can last at least 12 hours. Like I said, folks, it's not that expensive. People have got the recipes, they make the recipes, and the people who get high on it can stay high for a good period of time. That is a problem for law enforcement. That is a problem for society. But you also have to understand, as a stimulant, methamphetamine improves concentration, energy, and alertness while increasing appetite and ADHD. I know that I did, and at one time, Ritalin was a drug of choice. Ritalin was a form of amphetamines. For the kids that were hyperactive, had ADHD, it worked wonders for them. It did just the opposite effect. But now Ritalin is used on the streets, sold on the streets by people who get it, and then it's used by people that don't need it, and it causes that same euphoric high. Methamphetamines are also taken by people who are feeling depressed. You know, and we all have depressions. It may be taken from side effects of increasing. Also, it all has, and this is one of the things I touch very lightly around, but methamphetamine also has a way of increasing a person's libido and sexual pleasure. So, Matt, don't start doing it. The effective properties of meth is devastating power. However, any signs of meth, with the addictions, you as a person, you as a parent, you as a concerned family member, really need to look into it. Meth is, it is just taking over our society. You know, and there's no such thing as a recreational meth user. Methamphetamine is just too addictive. There are many meth symptoms and meth signs noticeable in meth addiction. As meth addiction affects the user both psychologically and physically, you can tell both. While those around the user may not want to see the signs of meth addiction, it's important if you truly love that person to address these crystal meth signs as soon as possible so that you can get help for them. The quicker you can jump on it, the quicker they can have recovery. And I'm telling you right now, folks, if you don't jump on it and you have a friend, a loved one, a child, a grandchild that is on meth, and you don't take some actions, you're helping that loved one of yours go down an area that's going to be oh so, so terrible. And then many times it's going to cause them to do things that they never would do once they were high on meth. Many crystal meth systems can put a person in a hospital or even cause death, folks. And let me give you a few ideas what it does. Meth symptoms vary with the amount of meth used. Some of the meth injections and factors, that all comes into play. You know, general psychological symptoms during meth use include euphoria. They seem happy, their anxiety. But then they go right back to irritability, aggression. They're paranoid. And like I said, they've got more energy, alertness. They can't sleep for days. They'll try to stay up as much as possible. They have increased self-esteem. And what that does, it's a false, it's a false increase of self-esteem. They also have grandiose thoughts that they can do anything, they can accomplish anything, that they can move mountains. In addition, there are times when they have hallucinations and they think things are crawling on them. Their skin may burn, and it may be burning from inside out, but they also have a psychosis that is developed by that. You know, and I could talk on and on about it, folks, but if you truly have someone that you care about, and you least absolutely any portion think that they're on meth, please do something to try to help them. Please try to get them into some kind of a treatment. If you can't get them in treatment, at least talk to them. Try to tie the source of where they're getting it. You know, and I know that's hard, and a lot of people don't want to consider this, but if you know where your loved one is getting their meth, do the right thing. Call law enforcement. Report it to them, wherever it's at. You know, the meth addicts themselves are going through many meth addiction symptoms while using withdrawal for the drug, but only some of these meth addiction symptoms can be seen by others. You know, once again, look for sweating, look for anxiety, look for fear, look for paranoia. The most obvious meth addiction symptoms are the signs of most addictions. They're the loss of money and secretive behavior. So if they don't have money all the time, or they're acting secret about everything, you need to check into that. And please remember, the longer a person uses meth, the more obvious signs of meth addictions become. You know, most meth people who are actually addicted to meth, or even using meth, they cause problems for their family, and maybe they're splitting up with their family, maybe it's causing problems for their children. It's also causing problems for society and law enforcement. The paranoia that comes with most meth users develops into a serious situation for loved ones and family members. You know, caution is always needed with anyone who must interact with an active user. The bottom line is this, folks, if you're listening to me today, the bottom line is that methamphetamine is a very dangerous drug that can ruin a person and a family's life. Addiction is hard to overcome, and recovery is possible, but it takes effort, intervention, dedication to break the cycle of meth use. And, folks, that's true with anything. You know, we have everybody and their dog nowadays trying to legalize, marijuana. And some states that's already legalized, they're trying to legalize it here in Texas. You know, half a dozen one or the other. Some people say it's not any worse than drinking and getting behind the wheel of a car. I don't know. I've never seen a person who is DWI have the paranoia that they're trying to hurt somebody or willing to hurt somebody. And I'm not the judge of that. Only the person is the judge of that. But I also know that if we legalize some of the gateway drugs, when that drug quits helping someone, we're going to step into a stronger drug that is going to try to get that same plateau of pleasure, high, or whatever it is they need to try to fix that craving. So, folks, I'm not here to moralize. I'm not here to preach. I'm not here to talk about politics. But I am here to tell you that we have a problem in our society. We have a problem in Central Texas, and that problem right now is methamphetamine. So, folks, if you know anything about it, if you've got anybody that you love that is on that, do the best you can to help them break that cycle. So, folks, until next week, we've just got a couple more things to say. Number one, the Dallas Cowboys start playing football. Cameron Yeoman, the Rockdale Tigers, Temple Wildcats start playing next week. So everybody have a great...
Defective products and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Are you fed up with sports talk shows that water down the truth and cover sports you really don't care about? Then it's time for Bleacher Bum Radio, Central Texas' only answer to those namby-pamby sports talk shows. Join me, Buffalo Bill Whitmire, and the Bleacher Bums on KMIL 105.1 The Ranch as we bring you all the hot takes with our own special brand of commentary on all things sports. From the guys who can't even get into the tailgate, Bleacher Bum Radio every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8:30 and again from 9:20 to 9:50.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
I love that song, man. It's a great song. Welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's August 18th, And we are at our product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms out of Heidenhammer. Arch Kuntz is the owner. I've known Arch for a long time. He's an awesome guy. He's got a great shop there, great staff. He's got Clint, Mike, Dennis. And they just got pretty much everything you need there. And if they don't have it, you can have it ordered. Revolvers, pistols, shotguns, rifle, ammo, accessories, knives, the whole works, black powder, reloading components. A lot of good stuff. So check it out. And we've got here, they're sponsoring this segment because we've got a Kel-Tec CMR 30 22 Magnum. Now, I did a PMR 30 some time ago. I love this handgun. It's a 30-round 22 Magnum handgun. It's awesome. But the CMR 30 that I'm about to talk to you about is the carbine version of that pistol. It's fantastic. It's light. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you're going to see a short video with me holding the weapon so you get an idea what it looks like, okay? And I've got this article from theamericanrifleman.org. I want to read it, and then I'll show it to you in the video. That'll probably play on Tuesday, probably. But this is by Gil Horman, and it goes, back in February 2011, I had the opportunity to review Kel-Tec's PMR 30, 22 Magnum semi-automatic pistols. Its lightweight, low recoil 30-round magazines made it an enjoyable pistol to shoot in a popular seller. So it was no great surprise when the company announced the rifle version. Kel-Tec's 22 Magnum rifle, called the CMR 30, has all the nifty features and positive handling characteristics I've been hoping for. It turned out to be a gun well worth waiting for. The Kel-Tec CMR 30 is a straight blowback, fixed barrel, semi-automatic rifle chambered for the 22 Winchester Magnum rifle, the WMR, rimfire cartridge, commonly known as a 22 mag. The gun's designers went out of their way to ensure this rifle was light and compact while maintaining a useful set of features. Unloaded with an empty magazine inserted in the grip, it tips the scales at just 4 pounds. Filling the magazine to its 30-round capacity with 40-grain bullet rounds and loading one more into the chamber increases the overall weight by just 4 ounces, making it an exceptionally lightweight gun to pack around, as I make note on in my video. The CMR-30 has two major sections, best described as an aluminum and steel upper receiver assembly paired with a polymer lower. The 16.1-inch long blued steel barrel features a 1/2-inch by 28 threads per inch, TPI, threaded muzzle that ships with a thread protector shield as well. The sight rail can be fitted with a set of Magpul folding polymer sights with an AR-type post and aperture configuration. An ambidextrous non-reciprocating polymer charging handle is located 3.5 inches forward of the trigger guard. By placing the charging handle low and forward, operators can reload without breaking their sight picture. One of the really slick features of the CMR-30 is the adjustable stock. Two aluminum support arms, contoured and colored to seamlessly match the rest of the rifle, are pinned to a lightly textured polymer butt plate. The stock's polymer release lever is located just in front of the trigger guard. I'm going to show you all this in the video in just a second. The stock's polymer release lever is located just in front of the trigger guard. When the stock is fully collapsed, the overall length of the rifle drops to 22.7 inches for easy storage. The incremental positions of the stock allow the length of pull, to be adjusted from 11 inches to about 14.25 inches, which makes the rifle accessible to a wide variety of shooter shapes and sizes. The polymer lower will look and feel similar to those who have handled and fired the PMR 30 pistol because the controls and configurations are the same. The 30-round pie-wedged shaped polymer magazine are identical and fully interchangeable with the PMR 30 pistol mags. The magazine release is located at the base of the magazine wall. I believe they call that a European mag release. The controls were all smooth and easy to operate. And as a fan of the 22 Magnum cartridge, I've been looking for a rifle that makes the most of the positive qualities the cartridge has to offer. The Kel-Tec CMR-30 is an exceptionally light and handy semi-automatic platform that capable of filling a variety of roles. With a 30+1 round capacity, top-notch trigger, which it is really, and its slim, compact shape, this rifle makes an ideal hiking and camping gun and great trunk gun for plinking or small game hunting and low recoil self-defense. Here are the specifications. Kel-Tec makes it, CMR-30, blowback, 22 Magnum, and the barrel length is 6.1 inches or 6.25 inches. It's just a great gun. Now, I'm going to show it to you here on the video. First thing I'm going to do is check. The magazine's already out, but I'm going to check the chamber. Chamber's clear. This is an incredible weapon. It is super lightweight. And I have my PMR-30 in my bug-out bag because, God forbid, anything happens and I got to bug out. I want something that can do a lot of different things. And the PMR-30, the pistol version, is a high-capacity mag that can hold 30 rounds of 22 Magnum. And 22 Magnum is very effective for whatever you have to do. You have to hunt small game, you got it. You have to defend yourself, you got it. It's lightweight, so it's not heavy, you got it. Well, if you look in this video when I post it probably on Tuesday, you're going to notice right now I'm looking at the handle, trigger guard, and towards the front of the receiver. This part looks just like the pistol version, except it was built into the upper part of the rifle. And that's pretty compact. Now, what they're talking about, the collapsible stock, you just pull out on the stock and you hear all those clicks. I could adjust it to any length I want. And right here in front of the trigger guard, right there, is a little lever you push down, and that allows you to push the stock back in. So you have a very compact weapon. Now, on the top, they've got a Picatinny rail from front to back. And I've decided to get a red dot sight that is just the right height, so when I use my flip-up sights, my Magpul flip-up sights, it'll co-witness. When I flip them up, like so, I can look through the rear sight. It goes right through the lens of the red dot to the front sight. So for some reason, my red dot goes on the blink and I can't use it. I don't have to worry about taking it off, even though I do have a quick release lever. I can just pop my sights and co-witness right through there and not have to worry about this not working. So that's a good aspect of it too. It's got a rail on the bottom if you want to put lights or lasers or whatever extra stuff you want to put on it, if any. Now, I personally put a slip-on Packmeyer grip with a couple finger grooves. And the reason I did that was I've got a large hand, and it filled my hand a little bit more because the pie shape of the magazine, I'm going to show it to you in the video right now, if you can kind of see it, it's wider in the top and tapers down, and it fits perfectly with the ammunition. And what happens is because my hand is a little bit bigger than most, that rubber grip that I slipped onto the handle fills it up, and it has a couple of finger groove contours. So it just keeps my hand solid on the weapon. But that's the magazine right there. And what's nice is the pistol mag goes into the carbine mag. It's interchangeable. So if I'm carrying my pistol, bugging out, and I got this on my shoulder, which is so lightweight, I can interchange all my equipment. So it's really good. The PMR-30 is made by Kel-Tec. Go to ANC Firearms. They sponsor this segment of the show. I can't, do it without my sponsors. And if you want a lightweight, compact, effective weapon, this Kel-Tec CMR-30 is a way to go. It's really an impressive weapon. You can do a lot with it. So give ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer a call. The number is 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard it on the radio here and you want to order yours, and they'll go hunt you one down. They're difficult to get, but they can find it for you. They've got a lot of different wholesalers they deal with, and they can find you pretty much what you're looking for. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Trey, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go over a bunch of things. I got some articles, and I want to go over some malfunctions and how to clear malfunctions on a handgun. So we'll talk to you in just a little bit.
Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Ball Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Bowls. Power through the summer with Cameron's Ball Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Are you fed up with sports talk shows that water down the truth and cover sports you really don't care about?
Then it's time for Bleacher Bum Radio, Central Texas' only answer to those namby-pamby sports talk shows. Join me, Buffalo Bill Whitmire, and the Bleacher Bums on KMIL 105.1 The Ranch as we bring you all the hot takes with our own special brand of commentary on all things sports. From the guys who can't even get into the tailgate, Bleacher Bum Radio every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8:30 and again from 9:20 to 9:50.
Capellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rocktail at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775. Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's August 18th, 2018, and we're going to have a little hodgepodge of stuff here. Trey, feel free to cut in if you want. There was an article here, an editorial in the Sunday newspaper, and I think it kind of fits what Ross and I were discussing about the discipline factors in a certain way, if I remember this correctly. So I'm going to just read this short article or short editorial. It's by Sarah Krymeyer from Belton. It reads, I know I'm not the only one tired of the continual effort of the liberals to destroy our country. It's a mystery to me why they let these people get away with the ridiculousness they hate and the moronic ideas they have accepted in their stupidity, not recognizing how they have been propagandized. Wonder if they realize how the hate has changed the dynamics of a country that has been and is the greatest place to live on earth. One writes that President Trump is a dictator. Does she not realize if he were, she would be forbidden to write her opinion in a newspaper? Does any realize that socialism would mean nobody would own anything, that the government would own it all, and the freedoms we enjoy would be gone? Are any giving a thought to the patriotism that my generation was taught? Do any of them have a clue about the sacrifice that so many have made to keep this country as it was intended by our founding fathers? Do they even know what the founding fathers did for us? Is there a school still teaching history and civics? We talked about that, didn't we, Trey? What about sense of pride? There seems to be none coming from the libs. They not only hate, they now physically attack those who do not agree with them. I can't figure out how so many assumed intelligent people have let their thinking be taken over by hate and for reasons they can't even say. They would rather be ignorant of the great things their president is doing for them. I think they would rather stay ignorant than find reality. Now, This is not a pro-Trump, negative-Trump, whatever. It's just a clarity that I agree that it's like there's so much hate in the world now. It's just everybody's out to get each other at the slightest little thing as compared to focusing on the great things. And yes, we're going to have bad things and we need to accomplish it, but being great, we can do that. But if we tear us all down in every direction, there's nothing left to be great about.
You know, that's the whole point of the First Amendment, is to allow difference of opinion. The thing is...
Is that us?
Yeah,
you want to
try?
Yeah, let's try. All right, let's try. You got a call coming. Welcome to the radio program. This is Matt. Who am I talking to?
Hey, Matt, it's Sean.
You're breaking up. Say it one more time.
Turn your radio down.
Listen, turning down the radio. All right, listen, I got a question about the whole access to firearms in your household.
Okay.
I don't own a safe, but I do have a minor in my house. But my question is, if the gun's in a safe, what good is it going to do me when the assailant comes into my home?
I totally get where you're coming from, man. But here's the deal. Let's say you got 100 guns, right? And you're only going to use one for self-defense at the home. Well, 99 of them better be in the safe or somehow secured so that a minor can't get them. That one you're using for self-defense, you're going to have to figure a way, whether it be a cable lock, a trigger lock, or a lock box right by your bed, which is probably the best thing, getting one of those hand, the buttons, or it registers your handprint, something like that, biometric, something that's very quick. But it all depends, too, on who's in the home. First of all, you're totally responsible if the child gets access to it, so you're going to have to make a decision. Am I going to secure it or not? If you're going to secure it, obviously you got to do it in a manner which is quick and easy for you. God forbid if something was to happen. And I think one of the easiest things is, like I said, a lock box, whether it's a push button or a biometrics. Or they also have the varieties like Smith & Wesson and Taurus. They've got the key lock. And if you're wearing the key or you got it around your neck or it's close by, you can put it in the key lock and adjust it real fast. But even that, under adrenaline-type conditions, can be difficult. So I think I would default back to the lock box.
All right, man. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for your call. Hope that helped. All right, Trey, you were saying?
I was saying that part of the problem, it's not unique to one side or the other. It's systemic from both of them. You know, we have differences of opinions because we're allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one of the cornerstones of the Constitution.
You just said something key. I don't care what your opinion is. If it's better than mine and it's proven, I will follow you. But there's the pillars of this country, the Constitution and Bill of Rights. You know me. You've heard me long enough to know I'm a defender of those. Don't mess with those. Everything else is up for debate. I'm okay with it. If you win your policy, okay, let's follow it. But after the course of time, it's not working. We need to change this. But don't change.
If it comes along and someone else is able to get enough support and get it changed, go along with it.
That's part of America. That's right.
If you, a perfect example, okay, and I know it's been beaten to death, but the whole kneeling thing with the NFL. It, you know, I understand the anger. I do. Because I agree. It's not. But how many servicemen died for them to have the right to do that?
That's right.
And yeah, it's disrespectful of them to do it, but that's their right, and men died that they could have that right.
Now, here's a perfect example, too. It's a privately owned business, the football team. They can do whatever they want, right? Mm-hmm. But we, as watchers and listeners of the program, can't
like
change it. That's it. Boycott it.
If you don't like it, you don't have to.
And trust me, dollars, they all think about dollars, man. If you're not buying their product, money talks.
You know what won't.
That's it. Okay. Now, which brings us to something else here. I've got an article, and I'm going to read this article to clearly state or give a very good idea of what fake news is. You heard this term, fake news. President Trump says it all the time, okay? I'm not being political here. I'm not pro this, pro that, although I'm not going to lie. I like Trump. I like what he's doing. But I want to give this as a clear example as to spinning of what somebody says. And I'll tell you why I do this. People tell me certain things. I go, no, that individual did not say that. What you're telling me, you heard from the news. I was there. I watched his lips. I heard what he said. But now this media outlet, for some reason, is turning the news into an opinion piece and trying to persuade people to think their way. And here's an example of what I'm trying to talk about. The headline is CNN bashes Trump for calling London terror attack a terror attack. CNN took issue with President Trump calling a recent London terrorist attack a terrorist attack in another example of how fake news networks ignores reality simply to disparage the president. Quote, President Donald Trump seizes on what he calls a terrorist attack, quote unquote, terrorist attack in quotes, in London, even though the incident is still in the early stages of investigation, CNN tweeted Tuesday, including a picture of Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu, I believe you pronounce it, briefing the press on the incident, where a mid-20s man reportedly mowed down several pedestrians near Parliament. The funny thing is, Basu himself said during that conference that the authorities are treating the event as a terrorist incident. Excuse me. Given this, this is Basso speaking, given that this appears to be a deliberate act, the method, and this being an iconic site, we're treating it as a terrorist incident, and the investigation is being led by officers from the Counterterrorism Command. Hijacking vehicles and mowing down pedestrians have become the new modus operandi of jihadists in Europe in recent years, which is why Trump didn't hesitate to share his thoughts about the attack once it became clear it was a deliberate act of violence. And this is Trump, another terrorist attack in London. These animals are crazy, must be dealt with through toughness and strength, he tweeted. And to close the article, this example highlights a simple truth. CNN has no interest in informing Americans. Rather, its purpose is to spin reality to serve a global's far-left agenda, and that agenda since 2015 has been to knock down Trump. And once again, I'm not politicizing this thing. I'm trying to say is they'll take something he says and spin it so people get this impression that he's just a rogue out there saying crazy stuff. All right. So that's one article on that. Now, I've got a couple other articles, too, but I want to make sure I get my gun malfunctions in. So I think I'll postpone on these and see if I got any time left at the end.
I want to insert real quick.
Go ahead.
The CNN versus Trump thing. We've seen it before. The previous administration, though, it was known as Obama versus Fox.
Yeah.
It's the same story, same song and dance.
Either side, yeah. I don't like it. Just tell me the truth, man. I'll make my own decision.
The fact is, it's more and more seeming neither side is concerned with the people as much as they're concerned with their own agendas.
Yep. I agree. Okay. Let's take a break from this for a second. And I was talking with somebody in particular, but I actually had, in the course of this conversation with somebody, a few different people came up and we started talking about malfunctions and how to clear malfunctions. So what I wanted to do is, in my class, I go over a few things, and I've done these videos before, ladies and gentlemen, separate videos on each particular one, but I'm going to kind of put it as a hodgepodge all together on this particular day in this particular video. And first thing I do, I've got my 1911 9mm. And I've got it loaded with dummy rounds, but I took the mag out, but I'm going to check the chamber anyway just to make sure the weapon's clear. The weapon is clear, okay? And the first thing we're going to do is understand cartridges. And we were talking about this before, verbiage, how it's very important, Trey. There's a lot of times people can say things, and in general, we get the general idea. But if I'm on radio just trying to describe things, and I say one thing, but in reality, I mean another, people may get confused. So let's talk about cartridges. Cartridges, some people call them bullets, right? Well, in reality, the bullet is the projectile. A cartridge or a round contains components, and those components are the bullet, the projectile, the shell casing made out of brass, aluminum, steel, whatever, a primer, and gunpowder. So when the cartridge goes into the chamber of the gun and you pull the trigger and the hammer falls, the hammer hits the firing pin, or if it's a striker fire, the pin is released. It hits the primer. The primers then cause the spark. The spark ignites the gunpowder. The powder burns, builds up pressure, and then it pushes the projectile out of the weakest part of the gun, which is the muzzle of the barrel. Okay? So there you have the components of a cartridge. Sometimes, though, cartridges can cause problems as well as other things. So the first thing we're going to talk about, the first type of malfunction is going to be a stovepipe. Some people may not know what a stovepipe is. If you look at a wood-burning stove and you look at the pipe that goes up to the ceiling, you'll notice it is in sections. Well, consider each one of those sections a shell casing. Like you shot a cartridge and the bullet's gone now and you just got the empty shell casing. Just picture those stacked one on top of the other. Well, in the video here, I'm showing I don't have an empty one, so we're going to use the dummy round with the head on it. But it sticks up like this, where it's sticking up vertical from the gun. What causes a stovepipe? If we can understand the mechanics of a firearm, we can get it back in action a lot quicker. Now, I have a formula here, and I'm going to show it on the screen. It's Aaron's formula for success. M plus M equals RT. Mindset, if you're into what you're doing, plus the mechanics. If you understand the mechanics of how things work, it's going to give you a better response time. M plus M equals RT. Mindset plus mechanics equals response time. So let's learn mechanics. Here we've got a 1911, and we've got a stovepipe malfunction. What are some of the things that can cause a stovepipe? Well, first of all, probably the top thing is the gun is dirty. If the gun is not sliding smoothly, if there's a lot of grit, gum, grime, it can slow the slide down to the point where it doesn't have enough energy to kick the cartridge out of the chamber and the ejection port, okay? Or let's say you're limp wristing. Limp wristing is where my hand is down here, and the gun's flipping in my hand, as compared to holding it nice and firm. Another thing could be the cartridge itself did not have a good powder charge. Instead of it going bam, 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 it just went bing, bing, bing. Just didn't have enough energy to push the slide to the rear, and it causes this malfunction. Now, what's the trick? How do we clear the malfunction? Well, if we're in a firefight, we'll say, and the first shot goes off, but then we try to pull the trigger again and it doesn't work, the first thing I'm going to say is probably a curse word. And then the second thing I'm going to say is the acronym SPORTS. I took SPORTS from the military because they use it for an M16 rifle, and I've applied it to a pistol. SPORTS. Slap. I'm going to slap up on the magazine. I could have accidentally pushed the magazine release button and it pops out, so I'm going to slap up on the mag. P is for pull. I'm going to pull the slide to the rear, and hopefully the trash will come out, the empty shell casing. O, observe. Is it clear? The chamber's clear. Everything looks good. R is release. T is take aim. S is squeeze the trigger. You're back in the game. Sports. We're going to use the word sports for all of our malfunctions, okay? So you've got a basic stovepipe malfunction, and that's how you clear it. On Tuesday, you can check out the video to see how it works. The next malfunction is one of the worst, and that's called a double feed. In the video, I want to show you that this generally happens when you release the magazine. Most guns will do this. I'm pushing the mag release button and the magazine is going to drop right out. Okay? Most cases, unless they're designed not to do that. Now, I'm going to put a round in the chamber, a dummy round in the chamber, pretend that it's empty. I'm putting the magazine into the gun and I'm dropping the slide forward. On the video, you'll see I've got the shell casing in the chamber and I've got another round trying to go in. That's a double feed. A double feed is when you shoot the gun one time, it fires, the slide comes to the rear, but the extractor slipped off the shell casing and did not pull it out. The slide comes all the way to the rear and then comes back and strips off a brand new round, but it can't go into the chamber because that empty one's still in there. That's a double feed, and that's a mess. What we've got is we've got a few points of stress on this gun that we have to release. I've got my guide rod spring that's compressed now because the slide is not in full battery, so it's compressed. I've got the magazine spring pushing up another round, and I've also got the round that's on top trying to go in the chamber halfway off the magazine, catching on the lip. I have to relieve the stress. First thing I'm going to do, lock the slide to the rear. Manipulating my slide stop, locking the slide to the rear. I just took off the stress from the guide rod spring, which is going to allow the mag to most likely drop easier. As I do that, the cartridge or the empty shell casing that was in the chamber on this particular moment fell out of the chamber, but I'm going to check it again. It is clear. If you'll notice, that round on the top here is partially sticking off the magazine. I have to, what they call, reset it, put it back in. All the while, I'm indexing the weapon. I'm keeping it to the side now. It's in line with my line of sight. So now that it's clear, I insert the mag back into the weapon. Gun's still in my line of sight. I straddle the slide. And now I'm back in the game. That's called a double feed. Double feeds are one of the worst because it takes a lot of time. However, you should be able to do this with your weapon without looking at it. And the reason being is if you're looking at your weapon and not the threat, the threat's going to do something you don't know. He may come behind you and then you're kind of screwed, right? I'm going to try and show this on video here and describe it. I'm looking at the threat. I have a double feed. Sports. I slap up on the magazine, pull the slide to the rear, and observe that I've got a double feed. Instead of me taking my eyes off the threat, I know my weapon. I know how it works. I'm going to maintain the focus on the threat, lock the slide to the rear, drop the mag. I hear the trash come out. A real quick check to the chamber. It's clear. Reset, indexing the weapon, guns in, and I'm back in the game. I'm not looking at the gun trying to figure it out. Very important that we learn how to do that. Now, the last one is this. This happens sometimes. I don't know why it happens. I think it's because people ride the slide. And what I mean by riding the slide is when the slide is locked to the rear, instead of grabbing the slide, pulling it to the rear, and letting it go, they grab the back of the slide and ride it forward slowly. And when they do that, the cartridge kind of jiggles and bounces out of where it's supposed to be. And when that happens, you have this problem. Now, if you'll notice in the video, I got a muzzle brake on it, but if you'll notice right here how the slide, it's all together, right? Well, actually, look at the backside. The slide is aligned with the frame of the gun. Okay? That's the way it's supposed to be. Now, when I put a cartridge in it and we have a reverse extractor malfunction, the extractor got behind the cartridge. Every cartridge has got that rim around it. The extractor goes in the rim, and that's what carries it in and pulls it out. But if for some reason it slips and gets behind it, this is what's going to happen. You'll notice that the gun is not in line with the frame anymore. It sticks out about an eighth of an inch. And that's about the distance that that rim is on the shell casing. Okay? So how does that happen? It's probably because you're riding the slide forward. There's two ways to fix it. You can either pull back a little bit on the slide, let it go, or you can bang it in like that. Banging it in on the backside of this slide doesn't always work. So what I like to do is pull it back, the slide, and let it go. And it still didn't work. Actually, it did. Okay? That's the best way to do it. If not, you just got to do a full rack of the slide and get your gun back in working order. But those are three different types of malfunctions, and I've got those videos on each malfunction all by themselves. But in this video, I showed it real quick to explain to the gentleman and the people that were listening the few different basic types of malfunctions that happen with a firearm. So you got the stovepipe, double feed, reverse extractor malfunction. Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to play a replay of Master Cindy Key doing something physically abusive to me to help you protect yourself.
Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Techniques, you could use a back fist, you can come over and do a hammer fist on the nose. I mean, you're not supposed to hit the person that you're working with, of course. These are just reaction drills. You can use a knife hand. You can use a ridge hand. And his hands are coming up. When I tap, I have to try to be faster or at least get my hands to block his so that I could get my technique in. And this is just reaction time.
That was fast.
So, but you just come over the top. You try to light tap, get whatever technique you want, and then the other side is just the defender. Now, once you get used to this, then you can like move. You know, like you're moving in a space and do it. It's a lot of fun, too. It is. It's a lot of fun. So I'll let you try.
This is really good radio, I'll tell you that.
Really good radio. My hand's coming up to block. His hands are coming up to block. But you have to just figure it out. So you need to go really slow. If you try to go really fast and you don't get the drill, then you'll just kind of be making a mess. So you want to tap, and tap, and then he's going to bring his hand up, and I want to bring mine. My arm is coming up blocking his attack, but I also have my other arm low for my solar plexus because he does have another arm, so that if he throws that, I can press down or at least press him away from where he's going to hit. So you have like a box block, but it works the same for attacking too, because when I come over the top on his hands, I'm going to slide my hand over, so because I'm going to try to keep him from getting his. But then I have the same kind of block cover.
You're going to have to watch this on video. It's very good and it's a lot of fun. So yeah. Let's do it a couple more times here. Oh, I wasn't ready for that one. Okay, you going to do here? That's pretty good. That's one more time. I'm going to do this one.
Okay.
She's very fast, ladies and gentlemen. You need to check it out. Tell them how to get a hold of you.
Okay. The number is 254-721-2775, and my summer program starts next week. So if you're interested, I have a special. Come on down.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Quicken Loans.
I'm Bill Rakoff. Top executives of the Italian toll road operator, which managed the bridge that collapsed in Genoa this week, are voicing their profound sadness for the victims. The chief executive, Giovanni Castellucci, at a news conference said they are very sorry.
Something happened, that's clear, and the justice should go fast and deep. And we are with the justice.
Meanwhile, a state funeral for the 42 victims of the collapse has been held.
It's Italy's National Day of Mourning following the collapse of the highway bridge in Genoa. Cardinal Angelo Bagnasco, who presided at the state funeral, said the collapse of the Morandi Bridge caused a rift in the heart of Genoa.